Hi there and welcome to Nordic Mum Podcast. In this podcast, your host Susanna will talk all things parenting, motherhood and biz mum life. She has exciting biz mum guests and their stories on how they juggle their business and motherhood every day. Every episode gives you tips and tricks to tackle your life as a parent or biz mum.
Welcome to Nordic Mom Podcast. This is your host, Susanna speaking. Now, if you are like me and you started your business and you're thinking you know everything, you didn't. And I was in my business for about a year until I started thinking, maybe I should do something about my search engine optimization because I was not ranking really high on Google. And I started looking, so how do you actually do it? And I was like, oh, this is a lot of work and you need to know a lot of things. It's like, I'm not sure if I know how to do this. And then someone recommended a lady called Belinda Irvine. And I contacted her and I said, can you have a look at my website? And she was in an airport going to flying wherever. She just said, do me this and do me that. And I will call you back when I've landed. And she basically did an audit on my website and we started working together. And yes, my website went up in a ranking, which was amazing. So welcome to the podcast, Belinda.
Thank you for having me.
Now, you worked over 10 years like with startups, you've been marketing agencies, one of the biggest companies in the world, and you've done everything about search engine optimization. You're like the SEO queen, as I'm concerned. I have a question. If you have a question, you're the lady I go to. Now, tell me first, how did you get started with SEO optimization and why search engine optimization was something that you started as a business?
Yeah, look, I started because like a lot of people in that I didn't have a lot of budget. I was doing a blog as a bit of a hobby at the time. I was an expatriate living in Singapore and I was a trailing spouse. So I was looking for something to fill my time and potentially evolve into a business. Yeah, I didn't have a large bucket of money from which to pay somebody to do my SEO and I was fascinated on the topic. So I thought, right, well, if I can't pay for somebody to do it, I might learn myself. So over time I did that and I've got to let you in on a little secret. I used to be a business analyst, so I'm that nerdy chick who spent more than enough time looking at spreadsheets and databases and stuff like that. So look, probably answers one of your other questions in that, you know, why SEO? Because it's that combination of art meets maths or art meets science. And if you be really scientific and follow formulas and, you know, follow set rules or tick box to the letter of the law, then you'll probably over-optimize your stuff. If you follow your electronic tools to the letter of the law, then you'll do the same. So I like the fact that there's that. It's like painting a picture. You've got to have that human element to have some decision making around what it is that you're doing and knowing when you're breaking the rules and why.
Wow.
Yeah, so over time, how did it evolve? I did my blog. At its peak, I was blogging 3 days a week. I was never the 7 day a week person. I just don't write that fast or have enough time to be doing 7 days a week.
Like most of us.
Yeah, that was back in the day where consistency was a thing and frequency was a thing and this was ages and it's no longer a thing, by the way. So I did 3 days a week or three blog posts a week and in its peak I was getting 20,000 hits a month on my website. Wow. And I was 75% of my traffic was organic.
That's amazing. That's a big number. Anybody there listening, that's huge.
Yeah. So, and look, I wasn't selling anything at that stage. Probably I just started selling some stuff at that stage because my grand plan was to sell as a dog related website. It was to go back to Australia when we moved and to sell some products out of my garage and create myself a little business. That was just picking topics that were relevant to my dog and to me that I was interested in learning about and then working out was their traffic is attached to them and making sure that they were optimized appropriately. So, another thing to point out is that I haven't touched that website now for 2 years just because of, you know, a whole pile of other things happening in life and clients and all that sort of stuff. and it's still getting 7,000 hits a month.
Wow.
I've literally not logged in, and I haven't told you what it is because it's so slow to load. It breaks every rule in the book because I just haven't had time to attend to it. I need to convert it from the platform it's on to WordPress. There's a whole pile of homework maintenance that needs to be done on that site, but it is still pulling 7,000 hits a month.
Yeah, that just shows that, you know, if you do the ground, the basics correctly in the beginning, it, you know, even things evolve, then you're actually doing all right.
Yeah, 100%. It just keeps paying. Whereas if you do Facebook ads, or and that's not to diss any other digital marketing channel, because there is definitely merit in doing a series of things depending on what your business is and what suits your business. But SEO is one of those things that if you're having to pay for it, yes, it will cost you money, but it will continue to work when you're asleep and when you've well finished paying the person to do the work for you.
And credit to Belinda when she did our website, and that's a long time ago now, it's more than a year, I think. And we get 90% of our customers through Google. Like, they find us through search engine, you know, from Google. And we don't do adverts in Google either. So that's where we get majority of our clients. So there you go.
And the author's still one of those amazing ones where didn't we fix your SSL certificate and the redirections?
Yes.
And we got a 300% increase in traffic overnight.
Yes.
That's one of those rare cases. So I don't want people to think they're going to get a 300% increase in traffic, but that was an epic win.
That just shows, ladies, if you're listening there, is that when you try to do it yourself, like, you have to do it properly if you want to do it, because I was trying to tweak things and I've been doing some things and I've been reading on it, but then, you know, we don't have time. We don't have all the knowledge, or you just don't have the time to do everything. And that's when you have to put your hands up and say, okay, I need help from someone, get an expert to do it. And I'm so glad that I found Belinda. Even if it's missed off your getting onto your flight to go to Fiji. What is a typical working day? Like, tell us what you do, because you do digital other things as well in terms of, you know, marketing. So what is your typical day like?
So my typical day, I probably like to talk a little bit about working from home for yourself, because it's an absolute dream and an absolute pain in the neck all in the same sentence, to be completely honest with you.
I'm only saying to someone
this morning, I would never for a minute want to have to be forced to go to an office by 8 o'clock or 8:30 every morning. But I'll tell you what, this morning I had to have my car at the mechanic by 10 to 8, and damn sure I was there. And how easy was it to get out of bed, because you just had to do it. There was no decision involved. It was just like, get up, get the car sorted, and get there. So yeah, I would never complain, because I've been able to rejig my day, and I now go to the gym. I leave the house by about 7:30 and I go to the gym and get my exercise and health stuff out the road for the day, which sets my day up to feel pretty amazing, because I do have the flexibility of the day, but we only have one car. It also works for my husband and I, in that if he's having a day off, he will, I'm home by 9:30. Or so, by the time I travel to and from, and then he can have the car for the rest of the day. I'll jump in the shower, and then by 10 o'clock or 10:30, I'll be at my desk. So my day does start a bit late compared to a lot of people, but I'm 2 hours ahead in terms of time zone. So you guys are only just, if you're in Australia, only just getting to the desk, and I've done my exercise for the day and my errands, and I'm sitting down at the same time as you. So that kind of works from my point of view. And then, look, I try and I break the rules all the time. I try to do the paid work first, so the build work, because as you know, with any business, there's a heap of admin and accounting and, you know, invoicing and
business stuff.
Yeah, in business development and blah, 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 and it's all got to be done. But it's super easy to get to the end of a day or 3 o'clock and go, crap, I've actually not billed a single hour today, or not yet, you know. So I now try and do that paid work first, where when my brain's, you know, thinking clearly and have a little bit of a running sheet. I do everything electronically, except I do have a book that I sit beside me and go, right, what are the three things I'm going to try and achieve today? And more recently have actually tried to allocate a little bit of time to them, because I felt that, you know, you write this list and you look at it and go, what was I thinking? Like, that's got 20 things on there, and there's a couple of 2 or 3 hour tasks. So it's any wonder that the list for Monday takes all week to get through. getting a bit more realistic as to what I can do in a day, and it's less stressful as a result of that. So
it's so funny. I just spoke to a lady before you, and we did a podcast interview about, and she's like a life assistant, and she does things like put people's, you know, lists on order, because they have one list for business, one for personal, then they have like things are not like put together. And it was so funny that you're talking about exactly the same thing. We were laughing about the fact that yes, we have all this list, but it's just getting longer, like you're just adding things on it, and you never seem to actually get on the bottom of the list.
yeah so I try to be realistic about what goes on the list and not sort of berate myself if you don't get to it all, and then reschedule things onto future days if I need to do that, in order to, you know, stay sane basically. And then I get to my business admin after the paid work. And look, I do all of our personal admin, and we just happen to be building a house right now. So our house is almost, well, I was going to say almost, our house is another client for me. It's another part-time job. And so, you know, I get to that sometimes soon, earlier in the day, but it definitely happens. And, you know, it's amazing how quick you can pump out a pile of basic admin of, you know, paying a bill or sorting out whatever you got to sort out if you've only got an hour left in your day. It's like, right, let's just see how much of this rubbish I can get through before the day's finished.
Now, in terms of, you know, anyone listening to this and you want to start your own business and you're thinking about setting a website, so you mentioned WordPress earlier, and that's what is the most common, I suppose, the website that people use, because it has, you know, very nice search engine optimization options on it. But if you don't want to go to WordPress for whatever reason, or you have already a platform that is different to WordPress, are you disadvantaged by, you know, the search engine optimization if you have a Squarespace or Wix comparing to WordPress?
Look, it's not a disaster. And some are better than others. Some you have no control over putting the meta data into the back end of them. So in that regard, I would say, yes, there's a definite disadvantage, but some of them are sort of halfway there in that you can access some fields but not all. So they're kind of still, you know, they're okay. But, and that's not to say that WordPress is the only one where you have total control, because there are other platforms that you can have complete control. But WordPress is probably the most popular, and the most configurable and easy to use. So, yeah.
And what would you say anyone out there who wants to, you know, tweak their search engine optimization, what tips would you tell them that what they need to look after and what they can do themselves before they have to go and get someone like yourself to help them out?
Yeah, so look, a couple of my favorite tips are, and if this is assuming that you're not on a hosted, so you're not on Shopify or Squarespace or Wix, this is assuming that you're on one that's self-hosted, I would definitely be having a conversation with your developer about your website speed. You can go to any number of, Google has their own, if you just type in test my website speed or something similar, you'll come up with a number of different websites that will test the speed, load time of your website. And your aim will be for 3 to 5 seconds. If you can get it to 2 or 3 seconds, then that's even better, but aim for 3 to 5. Anything over that is considered slow. And you need to be having a conversation with your website developer to see what they can do to help you make that website faster, because website speed is an absolute must when it comes to SEO and is one of the major, major ranking factors. The second one that I would recommend is having a look at the size of the images that you put into your website, because, and I don't care what platform you're on and I don't care what that website says that it can do to your images, but please do not put a 1 or 2 or, gosh, I've seen up to 5 meg images into your website and then expect that it'll handle the optimization or the resizing of those images within the platform. You really need to put them in at the size that you that is the optimal size. So for a full width banner, you're looking at maybe 2100 pixels wide. Most banners are not full width and they'll be 1600 pixels wide, and they need to be no more than 200 to 300k each in terms of weight. And any product images need to be around the 900, 800 or 900 by 500 or 600 and probably about the 100, 150K size. So it absolutely pays. I have had people take every image, replace every image on their site to reduce the weight of the overall weight of their website and down.
How can you reduce the size of your images? Just, you know, like layman terms, if you have something that is really big image, how can you, do you just crop it, or how do you make it smaller in terms of the size?
So when we say that making it smaller, we're not actually talking about cropping it, unless for some reason the product is really tiny in the middle of the picture and cropping it actually does make sense in that instance. What we mean is actually reducing the quality. So you'll understand that an image taken particularly in a raw format or in a large format on your phone might be like 5 or 6 meg. So it's got a bucket load of color information and pixels in that file. And we need that information if we're going to print it on a sign. You know, you talked about what I do in a day. I've got a simple contracting company that we design big, massive signs that you need to see from 100, 200 meters down the road. So they need to be really high quality images. But website images are, firstly, they're not 300 DPI, they're 72 DPI. So the quality of them, they need less pixels per square inch, I think it is, but don't quote me, I'm not stretching my knowledge there, or my memory, should I say. But if you can go, one of my favorite, easiest websites to go to is a website called reduceimages.com.
Reduceimages.com.
Yeah, and you do not need Photoshop. Someone actually just taught me this week too, if you're a Mac user, you can really easily reduce the size of an image using the preview program. So if you open up the file, there's functions within the menu that are super obvious that, you know, none of us never look at the functions that are available. You can reduce it super easy that way. But this Reduce Images website, I just save it as a bookmark in my Google Chrome. You literally drop your image onto the website page. You tell it roughly how big you want it to be. You press go and it does the resizing of that image for you and then gives you a button so that you can download it again. It's completely free of charge. I've never hit any kind of limits. I know there's a paid option, but for the amount I do, I've never hit any limits. So it's just too easy. I've used it for years, that one.
Oh, that's a great tip to do. And what other, you know, search engine optimization tips would you say that there is that you can do yourself?
Yeah, look, my other final one is one topic, one page. Some people try and put way too much information on a page and too many topics on a page. So, look, you can have a summary type page that might be, and if we use Tutu as an example, might be, you know, organic baby products. That might be a summary page, and you might have a heap of categories on that page, and you might have clothing and bedding and, you know, food equipment. I'm just making it up now. You would then click through to that individual page so that when you get to your clothing, it's organic baby clothing, you know, and it's organic baby food and it's organic baby equipment. And so then you can have a specific page for each one of those topics. One topic, one page.
And how much does Google value about backlinks? Because there's a lots of, you know, people out there who are, you know, like I've had emails, like I have to like block people. They just send me an email saying, can we have a link from your website to our website? So how much does Google actually value the fact that they will have, the, you know, when it's crawling over the page, you can see that there's other websites pointing to your web page?
That's major. That's really major, because what it does is it says that, so say, and I know you have a pile yourself and some pretty good ones. It basically says to Google, this Tutu lady, she must know what she's talking about, because a pile of people have referenced her or have pointed to her website and told other people about her website. So she must know what she's on about. And it gives you what's called domain authorities. So the more links you have going to your site, and a link is not a link is not a link, in that if you can't just go to, you know, and I'm going to make it up now, you can't go out there and create 200 websites that have got no content on them, that have no domain authority, or, you know, say you had 200 friends that had just started up a website yesterday, look, that would be helpful. But what they're looking for is high quality links. So other websites that have high domain authority and getting them to link to your site. Because that almost scores more points if that is, there's an easy way of putting it.
Now, search engine optimization to me, like when we started doing my website, I just realized that all these things that I've spent money, like Facebook adverts and Instagram adverts and all the other ones, like they did not, like my client was in Google, it wasn't in Facebook, and this is what I discovered through that. But if you do adverts like Facebook and Instagram and you have that link pointing to your website, or if you have your Facebook pages or your Instagram pages that you link to your website, how much value are those? And are they that important now? Because I recall having a conversation about this, that they were not that important at the time.
Look, they're no follow links, so that means that there's no major benefit. You can't go and chuck a link to your website on your Facebook page, you know, 100 times in a year and go, oh, yeah, created 100 links and not think that that's going to create any benefit. There is what they call social signals. And there is a benefit definitely to doing it, but it's nowhere near the same benefit that a backlink, for example, would provide you.
Oh, okay. So it's not kind of beneficial to go and do those 100 postings and put your link there then?
No, look, absolutely go and put your blog post on your social page to encourage people to go to your site and to develop the relationship and to give them insight into your business and blah, blah, blah. There's a million reasons to have a Facebook page. And it does play a small role, but if you were only doing it for SEO, then don't bother.
Now, where can people find information about search engine optimization, something that is, you know, valid and it's, you know, confirmed? So if they want to learn about search engine optimization themselves, or they want to know the tricks of the trade and try to improve their website, so where would you direct people?
Look, in the first instance, I've got a Facebook group that I encourage people to join. So if people just go into Facebook and search Shine Online, they'll find a photo of myself, and it's got my name in there as well. So Shine Online with Belinda Irvine, which helps people be able to find it. And look, I'm not posting every day in that group, but what I do post is vetted, and I encourage people to ask questions if they want to ask questions. Outside of that, I would encourage people to look at some of the bigger journals that are around. I'd be really careful about some of the Facebook groups that are around, and, you know, there's good and bad, and unfortunately in our industry there's probably more bad than good in terms of knowing. There's a pile of black hat things that, and by black hat I mean dodgy and illegal and underhanded things that can go on in our industry. And what I mostly mean by that is people pay to get backlinks, which is a complete breach of Google's rules. You run the risk if you pay for backlinks of getting completely deranked through a manual penalty. And there are plenty of people in plenty of groups on Facebook who advocate that that is the way to go.
Yeah.
So even at times I find it overwhelming to look into the different Facebook groups and know what is right and wrong. So I'd be very, very careful about what groups I play in terms of seeking my information from there. You know, use the big ones, like go to Moz, you know, SEMrush. Go to the big, well-known names, and then you'll be halfway protected from the rubbish information.
Now, if you already have a website and you want to tweak it in terms of search engine optimization, and you're kind of you're looking at your ranking and you're looking at, you know, okay, I'm slow, okay, my pictures probably needs tweaking. So what would you do for this person? How would you improve their website?
Firstly, I'm not going to assume anything about somebody's website. I have a SEO audit that has about 75 criteria in it. And I don't assume, you know, because some people can tell me they have the best website developer in the world, but unless it's my guy and I know how he operates, then I don't know who, and I'm not saying you have to use my guy, I just don't know how your person works, you know what I mean? So
yeah.
I usually put my clients' websites through, and you'd be blown away. You can't make assumptions. Even some of the biggest brands that you would expect to have their ducks in a row, I'm gobsmacked sometimes with what I find. So, I usually do an audit and go through and assume nothing. And look, it's not a fancy, you've seen it, it's not a fancy report. You get an Excel spreadsheet, and it's very practical, because I'm going to give you some homework to do, and I'm going to give myself some homework, and I'm going to give your developer some homework, and we literally work through that spreadsheet until the errors are fixed. And that spreadsheet provides us with the baseline. Some people say to me, how much is ongoing SEO going to be? And I'm like, I can't answer that question for you. I don't know what your site looks like. I don't know how many errors that are in there. I don't know, I think the best site I ever came across had like a 94 or 95% out of 100, if you're going to give it a mark type result, with very few errors. And that was incredible. I have had sites with 4,000 and 5,000 errors.
Gee, like that's a lot.
Stuff going everywhere. Look, some of them we might not have been able to fix, but just stuff going wrong left, right, and center. So we do that audit to start with, and then I can go, right, you've got a small amount of problems. Let's aim for this much per month, and I estimate that it's going to take roughly 10 or 20 hours or whatever the time frame is to fix up your issues. And so let's split that over 3 months, or, there might be a site that has an epic number of issues, right? Let's split that up over a longer period of time. And it very much depends on the client's budget, very much the issues that I find versus how long it's going to take to fix versus the client's budget. And then there's the ongoing stuff. Because of the issue around backlinks, and it's very, very difficult to get backlinks that people don't want to be paid for, because the amount of people, minute that you mention, doing a blog post on another site, people put their hand out. So that's a challenging area, and I'm very, very selective who I take on for a retainer type client. But what I'm finding now, it's working better, that I do that initial fixing type project and then provide the strategy and some coaching to the client who has the relationships in the industry and who has the contacts, and together we work on a plan for them to go and do that work, and then come back and have like a fortnightly or monthly coaching sessions where we literally check in, how's it going, and I can provide tips and suggestions, and we can look at their competitors and see what they're doing. And it's a pile of things we can do, but work more with the client to do that ongoing link building for themselves.
Yeah, I think lots of women who are starting their own business, and if you're listening to this, just be mindful that there's a lot of things that you can do that you don't have to pay that much. Like if you get your website started and the basics correctly from the beginning, you save yourself money in the long run, which I learned the hard way. But it's so much you can do.
And that's why in my audit almost should be called a digital an SEO audit, because there were so many things I used to see in people's websites that, SSL certificate, so that if you're not familiar with that, it's the bit where it makes your URL go from HTTP to HTTPS. I would see that they weren't there. I would see security plugins in place but actually not turned on. I would see backup plugins installed but not actually functioning or set up. I would see all this stuff that I thought, I can have the best SEO in the world, but if your website gets hacked or if you have no backup and you break it yourself because you don't know what you're doing, then you're going to cry anyway. So there's a few criteria in my list now where I'm hoping I can save someone a lot of pain down the track. Mm. And I also offer a website review because this is what I was going to say at the beginning. There's no point me dragging a pile of traffic to your website if it looks really ugly. Mm. Some sites I go to are just stunningly beautiful and happy days. That's great. But some sites are old and outdated and need to be. And I'm not trying to drum up business, but the reality is that beautiful things encourage people to spend their money. And if it's not beautiful, in no matter what industry you're in, then there's no point me dragging traffic to your website.
Yeah, that's so true. It's like everything is so visual in this digital era. And if it's beautiful, you're more inclined, and all the colors and all the branding is there and it looks inviting, you're more likely to click on the next page and look what else is here that oh, this doesn't look nice, and I don't, those colors are clashing, and oh, that picture didn't look okay. Yeah, that's so right. Well, it's been lovely to chat with you, lovely Belinda, and you can find Belinda on belindairvine.com and jump on her Facebook group if you have any information you want to know about search engine optimization. I will put her links on our conversation notes on the podcast. So thank you for coming and chatting with us.
Thanks for having me.
And if you love Nordic Mom Podcast, please jump in iTunes and give us a star or two and give us a review. Tell us what you think. We always love to hear from our listeners. Bye for now.